Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to another episode of Red Sox Digest, the only podcast that dares to admit we watch this team voluntarily. Today is Monday, July 21st. I am your host, Jim Delfino, and your Boston Red Sox have come up with a new and creative ways to lose a ball game. The Sox are now 54-48, clinging to playoff relevance like it's the last Fenway Frank at a doubleheader. For most of the game, the offense looked like it had already mentally checked into next season's All-Star break. But then we had a plot twist. Carlos Narváez decided he wanted to go home early and put his glove out to a hitter who did not commit to a pitch. Joining me tonight is Nick Face, who just this morning sent a handwritten letter to the Red Sox front office demanding that they sign Manny Ramirez, not as a coach, but to be an everyday left fielder. Ask Manny, Nick says, because Yoshida need a cutoff man, bro. Spoiler alert, if you know, you know. Also joining us tonight is Thayer Doyle, who currently is leading a change.org petition to bring back Daniel Naver, because according to Thayer, we've never properly replaced the grit. And finally, Nick Diamond also is joining us tonight, and he swears to God that Brandon Marsh is really Jason Wirth. Without further ado, let's get into it. Start with you, Thayer. Give me your reactions to tonight's debacle.
I've watched a lot of baseball games, and I've never, ever, ever seen a game end like that, which is really unfortunate because we couldn't have written a better script. As Red Sox fans, Wheeler was doing his thing, but we survived. In fact, we got the tying runs. We had an opportunity to take the lead, but we couldn't get that job done. We get to the top of the 10th inning. Here we go again, the top of the lineup. And it sort of seems to be the ongoing trend. Strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. 16 strikeouts today. We have to be better. And, you know, it's unfortunate that this game ended this way because we should have been talking about the outstanding work by Buehler and Chapman and what they were able to do with Whitlock taking care of business. But instead, we get Hicks, who comes in, who can't throw strikes, and then Narváez, who decides it's time to, you know, interfere with a check swing. It's very, very frustrating.
Nick Diamond, your opening reactions and takes.
Coming into this game, I thought they had no chance to win. So, surprisingly, they kept it close against the Phillies. Battle against Zach Wheeler. I know they struck out 10 times, but almost every team's going to strike out 10 times against Zach Wheeler. They put up some bad at-bats late in the game. I thought Jaron Duran had a bad at-bat. Willie Abreu had a bad at-bat. Not moving guys over in key situations, not driving a run in. Realistically, Aaron Hicks should not have been in this game. They should have won it in the eighth or the ninth. So it's a really disappointing way to lose, but I think they put some good at-bats against Wheeler, and after that, the offense went completely dead. They should have won this game before the 10th inning.
And Nick, Face, your reactions and initial takes to tonight's loss.
Well, it's nice to be invited into the Hollywood Squares, first of all. We have four of us here tonight, so whoever wants to be the center square, okay, go right ahead. Definitely the one that is not winning the Hollywood Squares tonight is Carlos Narváez. He is on the Punching Bag of the Night Award. That was inexcusable, lazy baseball at its finest. We have not talked about it and stressed about it enough. The Red Sox have a massive problem right now in terms of catching. We all have seen the moonlight of Carlos Narváez. Had a wonderful May. Hit 356. Got the nickname the Captain El Capitan for the team. June went down quite a bit. And then into the month of July, now we are seeing pass balls and catcher's interference plays. But you can't go to another alternative because Connor Wong is disgusting too. So, I mean, it's just the situation that you have right now. You have guys that can't throw strikes that are in big spots. You have little league mistakes being up at the plate where you go up to the plate with no baseball IQ. I'm going to steal that from you, Thayer, because I love what you said earlier. And you have no idea how to move the player or move the ball around. You have a runner at second base, okay, in the seventh inning. You can't get him in, okay? And then you have Duran up. You got Ref Snyder on second base, your ghost runner, and he strikes out, has no clue what he's doing whatsoever, had no business even being up in that at-bat, cost you the game. This team continues to make boneheaded plays in the field, up at the plate. I don't know how much more we can take of seeing what we're seeing, but we have to watch what we see. And unfortunately, what we saw tonight, outside of some, you know, really good pitching from, why can't I think of a Walker Buehler and Garrett Whitlock and, of course, Chapman, you have offense that still doesn't know how to hit major league pitching.
Very disappointed in Navarez tonight. A lot of pass balls, had that catcher's interference. Nick Diamond, I want to start off with you with in regards to Navarez's play. What are your takes exactly on him? Do you think it's starting to get exposed because of the fact that he's a rookie and he's been playing maybe more than he should be, and it's not a true platoon with a backup, a backup catcher like Connor Wong?
Well, I think he's been playing over his head all season long. If you go back to his minor league numbers, he really hasn't hit like this. He was known for his defense, and I think now he's getting tired. Most of the time your backup catcher plays way more than Connor Wong, but with how bad he's been this season, you almost can't play him. He's a black hole at the plate. He's got one RBI. He's got no hits with runners in scoring position. So he's unplayable, and you have to basically you're running Carlos Narvaez into the ground. Tonight was pure laziness and like a lack of focus by him, but realistically he's been one of your best players on the team this season, but it's really catching up to him, and catching is one of the biggest needs at the deadline. And it's turning out it might be the biggest need, because you can't put Carlos Narvaez out there for 140 games. You're going to kill him. And laziness is happening now, and it's a bad look for him. And he's not one of your biggest problems, but tonight he was. But I really hope they go out there and acquire a catcher, a competent catcher that can actually – I would hope he could start over Carlos Narvaez. So Sean Murphy might be the only option out there as a guy who's better than Narvaez, because – you brought Narvaez in here to be your backup catcher. We all thought Connor Wong was going to be the starter. He just turned out that he sucks. It's one of the worst players in Major League Baseball. Actually, I think he is the worst player in baseball. He's got like a 7 OPS plus or something like that. So he's unplayable, and you just got to – they keep killing Narvaez. So I feel bad for the guy. And I mean, he hasn't been bad this year. I know we're all going to kill him tonight, but he deserves it.
Thayer, your reaction to what Nick said about Narvaez, and what do you think the Red Sox need to do from here with their catching situation?
I totally agree with Nick, and we've been talking about this for a while since we've been doing the podcast, that he's really been doing a phenomenal job for a rookie. But there was going to come a time when he was going to hit the wall, simply because he's not catching the number of innings behind the plate in minor league baseball. And in the minor leagues, they have multiple catchers, so he's not playing every day. This was coming, and we knew it was coming. And unfortunately, like Nick said, there's no alternative. There's just Connor Wong, and he has not been able to replicate anything that he has done in the past with us. I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm assuming that pitching should be their number one priority. I don't know what catchers are going to be available, and I don't know where they're going to go for it. And I fear they're going to probably overspend on someone that they shouldn't be doing anything with. And we'll probably see, you know, a Danny Jansen come back, that kind of catcher who we'll overpay for and will not be what we need to move forward.
You know, this offseason, one of the first moves that was made kind of just ticked me off was Travis d'Arnaud signing with the Angels. I think it was a guy that I was really kind of picking at that would have been a really good fit, I think, here. Never materialized. But kind of switching a little bit gears, I want to talk about Walker Buehler. Nick Diamond, I want to open with you on this one. Walker Buehler, what did you see tonight? Did you get a little bit more confidence in him now that he faced a better competition team and really held him in check tonight?
Honestly, no. I think the Phillies really helped him out tonight. There was a lack of swing and miss. He got lucky. The Phillies were swinging at everything. I think he was at 76 pitches through six, and he, like, honestly, he hasn't looked that good. He's thrown a lot of balls over the middle of the plate. I know that one inning where they scored two innings, they hit him hard. Harper was all over him all night. So I think he got a lot of luck, a lot of hard contact right at guys. There's still not a big swing and miss, but he got the Phillies out. Six innings, two runs. What is it, seven innings, two runs? So he did his job. But realistically, if you look at the stuff, look at the swing and miss stats, it wasn't very great. And I'm still not confident going forward in him.
Nick Faye, same question to you. What is your reaction to Buehler's start? Have you gained any more confidence in him, or was this just a good blip?
I think if you want to look at confidence, I think Walker Buehler has more confidence in himself right now, which I think mentally was one of the best things that could happen for him. Now, for me, I'm a different cat, as we know. No, I do not have confidence that he's going to go out the next start and replicate what he did tonight. I think he also got lucky. I'm gonna say the exact what Nick said as well. I think what you saw for contact was balls being hit right at players. I mean, there was a lot of hard contact. There was some great plays. Marcelo Meyer made some great plays at second base in particular. There was some deep flies as well. And I think a little bit of weather, I know the wind and everything that's at Citizens Bank Park had something to do with it, held up the ball a little bit in the air. And I think that definitely was one of the cases here for Buehler. But he did keep his pitches down. That was one of the things I did notice with just location. I thought that was one of the things that worked for him well tonight was locating. He couldn't really find that in many of his starts, as we've seen previously. But I think location-wise, it was something that clicked for him and something that worked. If you had asked me last night, Walker Buehler is going to give you seven innings of two earned runs and make the Phillies kind of look silly? No. No. And only one of those runs tonight was earned. His ERA now for the month of July is at a whopping 3. So definitely serviceable. And again, if we're looking at Walker Buehler to be a 4 or 5 and he throws anything like he did tonight in his next starts upcoming, sign me up. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, since the second half started, I know we had, you know, Bayo obviously give up the home runs and Giolito give up home runs. But, you know, the starting pitching, and then, of course, Crochet was excellent. The starting pitching actually has been pretty good outside the gate. You know, it really didn't fall on them as much as the offense, which is why I want to switch gears a little bit now and move over to Thayer in this question about the Red Sox situational hitting. Really, really poor. I don't know what their batting average was with runners in scoring position. Obviously, it was pretty poor. But take us through some of the highlights that you saw and your takes on that.
We've been talking about it a lot. The one that really frustrates me the most was the Abreu at bat. After they had gotten men to second and third, he came up with an opportunity to take the lead. And that was really, I thought, the turning point of this whole game, where he came up. And his first two at bat, you know, his first two pitches were hittable balls, and he is swinging from his heels. And we saw that yesterday in Chicago. When he makes contact, the ball goes a long way, but there is a time and a place for that swing. Yesterday, when you're down a run and the team is, you know, really struggling, okay, go for that. You know, maybe even strike one. I'll give it to you. Go for it. But on strike two and strike three, you have to cut down your swing. You have to put a ball in play. A fly ball scores the run. A slow ground ball gives you an opportunity to score the run. When you strike out, there is nothing positive that comes out of that. So that's the problem number one. And the second one is absolutely the Duran at bat in the 10th inning.
It's awful.
A pitcher who is a young pitcher, 2-0, was nowhere near the plate. And he swings at a pitch up that he cannot hit. He always swings at that pitch up. He hit the home run today. Whenever he hits a home run, I know that we're in a lot of trouble because he now thinks he's Fred Lynn and Ken Griffey Jr. and tries to destroy everything instead of doing what he's supposed to be doing, putting the ball on the ground. You know, I really wish Cora would give him the Willie Mays Hayes treatment. Every time you put the ball up in the air, you owe me 10 push-ups. So he goes 2-0, swings at a terrible pitch. Now it's 2-1. Again, he gets down in the count, And instead of just trying to make contact, move the runner over, he strikes out, and you know the inning's toast from then on, which is really just how they have been handling extra innings. And now we'll talk about from a positive standpoint. Trevor Story with the big RBI to drive in that run. He has been a guy that has been struggling in the past with this stuff. I have to give him all kinds of credit. He is maintaining the ability to hit the fastball. That's what we have seen the last couple of years. He can't hit the fastball, so he tries to compensate by speeding himself up, and that's why he looks like a fool against off-speed pitches. This year, he has changed his approach a little bit. He's moving the ball from the middle to the right side on those fastballs, so he's not cheating as much, which allows him to get the bat head on those curveballs and the off-speed pitches, and yet he's still having a good approach and not trying to do what Abreu is doing, jack everything. So, Story, I have to give him his props. That was an excellent at-bat.
Yeah, I feel exactly the way you do. One of the things that bothers me with Duran and Abreu is that they really don't have the ability to try to play a little bit more small ball than they should, especially Duran being a speed guy. There's many a times that you feel like he should be trying to like read the room, bunt for a hit, try to get runners over, try to suicide squeeze, whatever it might be, and it just doesn't work. And it reflects in his on-base percentage. I mean, you got a leadoff guy with an on-base of 323. It's really not good. I mean, obviously Rafaela is low too, but you know, it's just something where, you know, it's kind of an all or nothing with Abreu, you know, and I think that's going to be a big problem moving forward. You know, he is leading your team in home runs, but you know, we don't need just a guy that's going to just hit home runs and kind of be useless elsewhere. Nick Face, your thoughts on the Red Sox situational hitting, Abreu, Story, and so forth.
We'll go positive to start. The star offensively tonight was Trevor Story, coming through in the clutch, making small adjustments to make a great approach happen. That's what needs to be talked about more. And that's what we need to see more in that Story can do this. I always have in the back of my mind, oh, here comes an automatic out. Story's going to come up with runners on and he's not going to get the job done. I already was processing that moment going into my mind. I think it was the seventh inning when that was going down. And he came through and he tied the game 2-2. It was a huge monumental turn in the game because then it gave us that little glimmer that kept us in the game and got Chapman up and put Whitlock in. And there was that thought, can they sneak something in? And then the 10th inning hits. And this is the big thing that I have to mention. And Thayer, you hit it right out of the park with your analysis and breakdown. Jarren Duran is killing the Red Sox. Yes, he did get the home run to start. But I can't take it anymore with his, I got to be Mr. Jacked Up Dude. I got to lead the league in home runs. It's not working for you, Jarren. It's not. He should have been bunting in that situation to move Refsnyder over to third. And if that had happened, we would have taken a 3-2 lead. But we're not. That's what needs to be talked about more. And I'm not seeing that online. I'm not seeing fans understanding that situational approach that the Red Sox have lacked all season. And if you really want to stress it, for the past three seasons, has continued to catch up to them and makes them unwinnable when it comes to these situations in extra innings. As soon as this game got to extra innings and I saw what Jarren Duran did, I said, well, I already know what this outcome is going to be because it's so predictable. We know what they're doing when they go up to the plate. It's the Pete Fatsy launch angle 24/7 with these guys. And he is in the head of Jarren Duran. And he is in the head of Willy Abreu. And it's all about the launch and how far the friggin' ball is going to go. Until Pete Fatsy and this hitting approach is gone with this team, you are going to see this same shit happen more and more. It's just, that's what's going to happen. Until John Henry, Sam Kennedy, and the rest of the idiot squad upstairs nut up and get rid of this freaking awful approach that's ruined this team for years. the philosophical changes that need to happen with this organization to get back to winning baseball starts right there. And if you aren't going to do that, you are going to continue to have your fan base suffer and have me start screaming and yelling until any change is made. That's what's got to get down. That's the nitty-gritty right there. But it's not going to change because that's how stubborn and inept this team is.
Very frustrating for sure. My next point I wanted to bring up was about Alex Bregman. Nick Diamond, this one's for you. You know, you can definitely tell that he is not 100%. Or is he 100% and he's just not trying to put any strain on his legs? There was a couple plays today where he could have maybe scored in that earlier inning, and then later in the game, you know, he was trying to reach first base on an infield ground out, and he just couldn't make it. It was close. But if Bregman's running full speed, are we a different team?
Yeah, we probably score at least one more run tonight. I think it was on the Roman Anthony double. He got to third base, and any other runner he would have scored. And there was an infield, would have been an infield single. I think he would have got to first base. But I think we're a worse team without him. Even if he's at 70, 75%, I still want him out there. He's one of your best right-handed hitting bats. He lengthens the lineup. A question I got for you guys, do you think it's time for Roman Anthony to bat leadoff? He's your best on-base guy besides Alex Bregman at the moment. I think he can handle that leadoff spot, at least against right-handed pitchers. Move Duran down maybe like the 6 or 7 hole and maybe completely lengthen this lineup. I think Roman Anthony needs to get the most at-bats on the team.
Thayer, you want to take that one?
I think eventually, yes. I don't know. We talk all about the pressure that they're putting on the kids. I think Anthony is absolutely capable of being the leadoff man. I don't know if I would do it just yet. I'd wait until we trade Duran, and we should trade Duran to get pitching and to get something in here. That would be – once that happens, and I wrote an article about it before, I think he will be your leadoff guy. He's able to do it. He's proven that he's not totally overmatched. However, 4 strikeouts today is a little disappointing. Granted, you're facing a star in Wheeler. But I think he can do it. I wouldn't be shocked if that were the case. However, he's also one of those guys that right now I think is the most – not that there's a lot of them, but he's putting up the best at-bats in clutch situations. So I'd kind of like to have him in places where he can actually drive in some more runs. And I don't know if the bottom of the lineup, other than Rafaela, is going to really be on base all that much.
Yeah, you know, Nick Diamond, it's an interesting question. And, you know, it's one of those things where it seems like he could probably excel at pretty much anywhere, 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think if we had the right – and I brought this up earlier with my frustrations with Duran, but I think if you had a more prototypical leadoff guy, I think I still like maybe Anthony in the number 2 hole. I know that, you know, Bregman's been there quite a bit, but I think overall that would be where I would like him the most. That said, I think he would excel there as well. I just don't know if he's got enough speed. I really don't know much about his speed as it relates to what I've seen, but I don't know if he's really going to be a guy that's going to steal. But, you know, you can't knock the on-base percentage. I mean, he and Bregman are the only ones that have an on-base over 370. And I know Anthony's a little bit more of a smaller sample size, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding. He definitely can, you know, take his walks, see good pitching, and so forth. So I like the idea, but I think if gun in my head, I'd like him to stay at a number 2 spot. Nick Face, what's your reaction to Roman Anthony?
Yeah, I go no. You don't want to mess with Roman Anthony. It is too fragile right now, guys, with our minor leaguers and this whole team in general to start mixing and matching and taking a strength right now of what you're getting from Roman Anthony and then putting him up to the top. I think it's a great question to ask. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want to put that on his belt at the current moment. I like seeing him in the 3 spot. If that's where Cora's going to find consistency for. I really want to find, again, that spot that's consistent for him. I like the thought of the 2 spot. I do. if I put him at two, I'm probably going to put Bregman to three and then figure out, you know, who my four hitter was. Tonight it was Trevor Story. Is he really your four hitter? No. But tonight he went 2 for 3. So I might try my best to keep consistent with that. And then if he starts to struggle, then move him down. I did like tonight that we did see Carlos Navarez down to the 8 spot. I don't want to see Carlos Navarez up in the 4 spot anymore in this season. And if Cora does that, that's on him. I think one of the big questions, though, from this question here is figuring out what spot these guys do align the best with. And I think all of us, all three of us, or all four of us, including myself, would all say, we don't know who our 4, 5, 6, 7 sometimes are going to be on a night-by-night basis because we don't really have a four hitter. There's no cleanup guy. There's not really a prototypical three guy. Our leadoff guy has been missing in action all season and strikes out every game. So that's what you have right now. And it's not pretty.
No, I'd like to see the stat on how many different lineups we've had so far through 102-103 games. I bet you it's staggering, you know, especially
101.
Now, especially with Devers gone now, and Casas gone. But it's just a staggering amount of how this lineup has kind of been rewritten each and every night. I do want to switch gears to something that Nick Face had wrote in our chat room today, and that was involving Marcelo Mayer. And Nick, I'll let you take the reins on this because it was your topic.
So my big question that I keep pondering here is, what is Marcelo Mayer? What is he? We know defensively he could be a Gold Glove caliber player down the line. The glove has been Major League Baseball ready, looks polished. I think all of us here are pretty convinced that that is his best skill set that we have seen so far. I think when it comes to hitting, I think, at least on my end, I am a bit disappointed. And I think I'm disappointed because this was your number four prospect that was drafted. This was your guy that everybody said, star, this is going to be your future. This is going to be your identity. Your shortstop for years and years. And I'm still kind of sitting here waiting to figure out what he is. They've slotted him into many different spots here. When they called him up, it was because Bregman went down. He had never played third base consistently. That was your shortstop that was in Worcester and coming up and everything. And he handled third base again defensively great. I think every one of us here was very pleased with when Bregman went down, what's going to happen with that whole position. And I think he handled that well. But I do think that he still has yet to have his moment. I think he is now being outshined by Roman Anthony. I think he's trying to figure out what his spot is on the team. We can also discuss here that Alex Cora platoons him because he doesn't hit against left-handed pitching. We've also seen samplings from him against lefties, and they've looked bad. Tonight, just for example, he was pinched hit for by Romy Gonzalez, rather. And unfortunately, that is because you haven't seen enough. You don't know right now what this guy is going to do for you. And when the trade deadline is coming, I am left questioning here if Marcelo Mayer is my future. If he is my future and he is a building block guy here, am I keeping him or am I packaging him to get me something that I can help build my team to have a better pitcher or a better situational hitter or something like that? So I asked you guys the question here. It's got a little bit of play on my Twitter X that's gone on here. But I'm still, at the end of the day, I am left here feeling disappointed and not overly thrilled with what I've seen so far of Marcelo Mayer.
Fair. Your reactions to Mayer, and the other thing that I wanted to add into that is that as far as potentially using him as a trade piece, what's your take on that?
I agree with Nick. I'm not going to say it's totally frustration, but I think from Mayer's standpoint, Anthony is the real deal, I think. I think his talent level, his ability is different. And the unfortunate part for Mayer is where he was drafted and all the hype that went around with that draft, that he should have been a number one, a number two kind of guy that they were all talking about, and he fell to us, and we got lucky, and we have him. And the way the organization has sort of played it up, that he was going to be the next great thing. He was our hope. He was the top pick. And he's never really shown all of that potential, I don't think. As we've sort of followed him through the minor leagues, he's been hurt at times. He's had some flashes, but it's never been a situation like Anthony where it was, this guy is absolutely it. We've sort of talked a little bit about it today in our war room. Like, what does Mayer project to be? And I loved Nick's idea that it's really a Stephen Drew. I think it's a Stephen Drew, yeah, where he's going to be a good glove guy. He'll probably have some decent productivity offensively, but he's not going to be someone who's going to carry your team. He's not going to be someone that is going to be a perennial all-star. So I think he'll be a serviceable major league shortstop.
Yeah,
Do I want to trade that away now? And I think Nick Diamond had just like, bye-bye. You know, if Minnesota were to say, you can have, you know, Ryan for Mayer, I think I say yes. Yep. Yes, you can have him.
I do too.
Give me the pitcher. I will find another shortstop who can be a serviceable major league shortstop.
David Hamilton lives.
Well, the thing is, we have two other shortstops in the minor leagues that they couldn't. If they trade Meyer, you also have Mickey Romero and Arias coming up behind him. So you have two more not as close to the major leagues as Marcelo Meyer, but Marcelo Meyer is definitely a guy that you could trade. I don't think he's untouchable at all. I think he might be more tradable than Peyton Tolley at this point.
Yeah, good points. I've not been a Meyer fan since the day he signed. He just didn't really jump off the page to me back when he was originally drafted. You have to kind of look back and say, why did he fall forth, right? What was it that Ben Cherington, who had the number one pick, and I don't remember who was two and three, but regardless, work with me for a minute. What did these teams not see that the Red Sox did see? Or was it one of those things where you just had a naive Chaim Bloom, and because he was the sexy name that dropped to you, he took him? And a five-year-old could have picked him, is my point. So I can't say anything about the glove, and some of his footwork has been pretty damn good, pretty damn major league ready talent-wise. But to both of your – all three of your points, Nick, you said basically, you know, what is he? Thayer, same thing. And, you know, Nick Diamond says that, you know, we have the luxury to be able to move him. So I think I agree with everybody. You know, the Stephen Drew comp, I just brought him up, 12 years, a 15.8 career war, and he averaged a .252 batting average, 15 home runs, 66 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. He had a 318 on base percentage for his career, a .423 slugging, and a .741 career OPS. You know, I mean, is that what we're going to get? Because if that's what we're going to get, to Nick Diamond's point,
bye.
See you later right now. And I'll take 2 years of Joe Ryan, and hopefully I can add 4 years to that. That would be a wonderful thing to do. Switching gears, I want to just kind of do some final takes. Nick Diamond, let's start with you. Any final takes for tonight that you want to go over, or any rumors or things that you've heard?
I think tonight just proves how much of a need the catcher position is. You can't get by with Carlos Narváez no matter what. Connor Wong's a black hole out there. I think it's, besides starting pitcher, it's probably your second biggest need at this point. I think first base is an afterthought compared to catcher. And if you can get a catcher that could play first base, that's even better. There's not many names out there but you can think of whoever you really want. I just think it's a really big need, and you can't keep throwing games away with pass balls and catcher's interferences. It's pathetic. It's worse than ground balls going between shortstop's legs.
Nick Face, your final take and thoughts for the evening.
Hold on. Hey, is this Alex Anthopoulos of the Braves? Hey, it's Craig Breslow over here with the Red Sox. Yeah, our catching is a disaster. What's it going to take to get Sean Murphy here tomorrow? Okay, let me sleep on it.
I gotcha. Fair, your final takes for tonight.
Final takes. We've been hammering on Buehler. We've been hammering on Cora a lot. Let's give them some credit. I thought Buehler, you know, he pitched to contact. He didn't walk people. Got us seven innings against a very good offense. He got lucky, but sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I think Cora made the right moves, bringing Chapman into the eighth to face those bats and get through the eighth. I thought put us in a nice situation where we had an opportunity. Whitlock came in, did what he had to do in the ninth inning. Those nine innings were done beautifully. Hicks still is someone I can't really trust. That leads to a conversation for next time about was the Devers trade good, bad, or indifferent? I don't know. What we talked about, we'll actually see that as we sort of get into the iron of real pitching. Would it have been nice to have Devers in the lineup today? Maybe, but who knows. But in general, Cora did his job properly today, I think. And I also like what Buehler did. It's an unfortunate ending to what should have been a very positive conversation.
Yeah, my final takes is about pitching. I want to talk a little bit about, with Thayer, what you were actually saying in the war room was about the idea of Chapman in the eighth inning there. You know, I mean, the matchups were great. You had to bring him in. You're facing two left-handers in Schwarber and Bryce Harper. So, I mean, it was a great move there. But I want to talk a little bit more in my final take about Zach Wheeler, because when you have good pitching, it neutralizes the hitting. It just does. This isn't rocket science. Everyone on this podcast and all our listeners know that. But I can't stress enough how I feel about going out and getting another bona fide front of the rotation starter or a number two to match up with Crochet. And I know we've been talking Joe Ryan to death. He is under my Christmas tree. I think he's the guy that could take us into a playoff spot just by being here, and you push every other starter down the road. There was nobody on this podcast that I believe would have thought you would have gotten this out of Buehler tonight, but that's the problem. We can't assume he's fixed, and we have no idea what to expect on the next outing. Everybody knows what they think they're going to get out of Garrett Crochet. You don't know what you're going to get out of Buehler. And I need a more dependable number two starter to slot into that spot and move everybody else down. And I think that's going to be the answer, because you're going to have nights where you don't score a lot of runs. I mean, yesterday's game, you know, it looked like it was going to be a similar matchup to tonight. And, you know, Abreu got into one, Bregman got into one, and all of a sudden it's 6-1, you know. But it didn't look like it was going that direction. So the one thing that you can take home positively from the second half, and I brought this up earlier tonight, was that even though Giolito had a bad first inning and Bayo had a bad first inning, they got through it, both of them, and, of course, Crochet and Buehler tonight. But you can see where strong pitching is going to be an important thing, and having another bullpen piece that's reliable. Garrett Whitlock in a one-inning situation, I think, is nails, and I think it's the way that he should be managed from this point on. And, Nick Face, you've brought this up multiple times about getting rid of the two-inning Garrett Whitlock, three-inning Garrett Whitlock, and I think it's spot on. So, you know, I think everybody has great points. Nick Diamond wants a catcher. I can't disagree. I want a number two starter. I can't disagree with myself. You know, so the idea here.
Now I'm going to keep checking this all night, thinking I'm actually friggin' Craig Breslow.
Well, you see, I think we gotta try to maybe gonna catch
up. We talk to the other nerds in the department here to see if they can actually process this.
Yeah, the XBA. Anyway,
my robots will get back to you tomorrow.
Exactly. So, with that being said, I'm gonna call tonight. I'd like to thank my quad members here, Nick, and Thayer. I hope everybody has a great evening. Hopefully we go out tomorrow and there'll be a little bit of a surprise. We got to try to take at least one or two of these games to show that this team is worth investing in. But leave some comments below. Go ahead and join us. If you haven't subscribed to our digital product at RedSoxDigest.com, we have articles every day. And most of them are on the game from the night before, as well as Theris Fenway articles as well. So have a good night, everybody, and go Red Sox.